And for the rest of the hour, we're going to be hearing from you. Many of you have sent us letters and emails over the past year. And as this year winds down, I thought it might be a good time to share with you and share with your radio neighbors what they have to say about Science Friday. And maybe you heard something on the show that you want to talk about or something you didn't like during the year. Cards and letters time. Some open phones, 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. As always, you can give us a call and tell us what's on your mind, and I'll start reading through some of the letters. And some of them generated a lot of mail. Some subjects in particular generated a lot of mail, a lot of letters, try to get to those subjects. One in particular was the program we did on intelligent design, and one with program we did on Richard Dawkins on his book. And I think Richard Dawkins generated a lot of mail from people who are very upset with his characterization. I'll read a few of them. This one comes from Tom and Anna Fisher, who writes, "Dear Talk of the Nation, Science Friday is a fan of your show in general, including Science Friday. I was saddened by Richard Dawkins' dismissive remark that I, along with all other creationists, are ignoramuses. This is an unfortunate statement. It makes the evolutionists look like dogmatic inquisitors rather than open-minded thinkers." There were other ones like that, people basically were saying the same thing. Ben Scholett says, "My challenge to you is to talk with and allow questions for a creation scientist. Can you keep NPR's moderate swing goals and present facts from both sides to your listeners? I believe and hope that you will." Another letter from Annie Whalen in Wisconsin writes, "I always listen with great interest to your show. Today I was very disappointed by Mr. Flatow's and Mr. Dawkins' intolerance. Labeling any group religious ignoramuses is offensive and disrespectful to me. I love radio. I love public radio because of the exchange of ideas, but this kind of bigotry has tarnished Science Friday's image." A lot of people did not like that. I felt like I was a little shocked myself, I'll have to say, when he came away with that statement. But those are his opinions, and I knew we would get letters from you, and we would try to read them. And we have lots of opinions by authors who come on and talk about their books. That was a letter he had, an opinion he had in his book, and that's what he expressed. We had a complaint that was brought on by an interview we did. I'm going to see if I can play that interview. And this is happens when let me read it. This is Peter Neufeld mentioned this on Science Friday. We were talking to him about the Innocence Project, and here's what he had to say.
The practice started by a very enterprising young assistant DA in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it really caught on across the country. And what they're doing is, like I said, it's a rape case. A young girl's been raped. They collect the semen. They run it. They get a DNA profile. They run it against the convict offender database. They don't get a hit. So the person has not been previously convicted of a crime. They don't have his DNA, but they think that one day they'll catch that person and they want to be able to prosecute him. And so what they do is they indict the DNA profile. At the Innocence Project, we think that that's a reasonable compromise. Because clearly, in that kind of case, whoever left that semen on an 11-year-old girl is the person who, in most likely, unless it was consent, committed that crime.
All right. Now we had that on the air a while back on November 5th, and then this letter came in from Marilyn Graham, who was listening at KQED in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she says, "I am an advocate on a sexual assault response team for a social service agency, and I was aghast at his words. But it takes no special training to know that, quote, finding DNA evidence on an 11-year-old child is never by consent. I realize that Science Friday isn't necessarily geared towards social humanitarian listener causes. However, I believe it behooves KQED to make some kind of correction. There are enough creeps and developing creeps out there who might also be listening to Science Friday." So she was characterizing, very upset with the way he talked about having intimidating that there might be samples of DNA in an 11-year-old girl by consent. And he writes back in response, "The question by the listener offers an excellent example of what happens when a speaker's intent to express sarcasm fails. My remarks, unless it was consent, was deliberately sarcastic. For a defendant to raise a consent defense in that specific context would be absurd and ultimately futile. The point I was making is that semen recovered from an 11-year-old justifies a John Doe indictment of the DNA profile, even if you don't know the perp's name. This conclusion is reiterated in my next exchange, where I refer to cases such as this as having DNA essential to the commission of the crime. My apologies for not making the absurdity of my hypothetical sufficiently clear. Peter Neufeld, co-director of the Innocent Project. So I think in listening to the tape myself and recalling the conversation, I don't think he really meant to say. You know, sometimes that's the, you know, that's, sometimes that's the problem of radio and doing live radio, is that you might say something. It happens to me all the time. Something comes out of your mouth, and you're not, you know, I'm not apologizing for him, but I can see it happening. Something comes out of your mouth that you don't mean to say, and something that you think you're saying, maybe if it has a, you think it has a certain tone to it, doesn't have a certain tone to it. So that's what happens. Then we have another letter from very interesting letter from John Ramiak. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Ravenna, Ohio, who says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I have greatly enjoyed your Science Friday program, but as the elections approached, I thought the show became quite political. Every paranoid psychotic who thought their personal ox was being gored, now that ox has been whacked, called into the show to cry and yammer about stem cells, the poor gay caballeros, oil in the caribou, oil in the Arabs, oil in the Texans, straight Republican meat-eaters, and their predecessors who ate all the giant ground sloths, having first caused the Permian and Cretaceous extinctions, which brought on very numerous ice ages. All of this was before the human vegetarians and religious fanatics showed up to save the world, of course." Then he goes on to say, "Prior to the next election, you should consider running a, quote, reality dating service for those needy souls. You could pair up homosexuals with hypochondriacs, the uneducated with the naive, vegetarians with animal rights nuts, utopian socialists, meaning liberals, with UFO clubs ad infinitum. You could admire, they could admire each other and practice shameless self-aggrandizement to orgasm. It would clear this. I would clear this with Jerry Springer, but I feel you would be providing a needed soapbox for those who look normal and aren't yet having an affair with a mounted policeman's horse or great Aunt Sophie's upstairs maid's vacuum cleaner. Could we go back to science and leave politics and religion to those who can't find a life? At least, please, pick a show topic that won't get your skivvies in a bind. P.S. I could send an email. I'm too old to operate such doggone dastardly digital devices. I've got a VCR that won't work now." So I think it was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there, but making fun of us and our audience and everybody else. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's take a call. Let's go to John in Astoria, New York. Hi, John.
Hey, Ira. Great show today.
Thank you.
Curious and everything.
What's on your mind?
So, okay, I'm pitching a story idea. There was an article in Discover Magazine, May 2003, entitled "Anything Into Oil" by Brad Lemley. If I may just read the first sentence or two.
Sure.
Okay. Gory refuse from a butterball turkey plant in Carthage, Missouri will no longer go to waste. Each day, 200 tons of turkey offal, and then there's a full-page picture of some very awful turkey offal, will be carted to the first industrial-scale thermal depolymerization plant. So anyway, the point is, this fellow has, a group of fellows have invented a process to change any organic substance, turkey waste, rocks, you know, anything organic in nature into high-grade oil, crude oil. And so I thought it would be a great story for you to do. It seems like it would supplement our dwindling supplies of oil in the world. It would deal with the world's waste and our country's waste, and it would slow down global warming, possibly. I don't know. So that's my idea.
Just how to make anything stuff into oil.
Well, it's a process to take any type of industrial waste. And change it, yes, change it into crude oil, into a high-grade crude oil. And, you know, the article goes on to detail how the process is done. I can't really get into that right now, but it's just a very, it seems like it would be the answer to our civilization's problems at this point, you know, and I just wonder why more people aren't talking about it. But I love your show. And
thanks. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about, you know, getting out of oil, getting out of the oil business, altogether.
This is true. Perhaps, okay, like this process would actually cause less global warming to produce the same amount of oil or the same amount of energy, and it would eliminate like waste, you know, like all types of garbage and industrial waste, and it would all just basically, I know this sounds odd, but it would just go into one end of this machine, and out of the other end would come a high-grade crude oil. So I just thought I'd call and pitch the idea. The writer's name is Brad Lemley, and it was in the Discover magazine of May 2003.
All right, thank you. And then there's a book people can take with them.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're taking your calls and letters this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We have a little business to take care of people want some sort of equal time. And this comes from Gonzaga University, which is located in Spokane. It is written by Professor Nancy Staub. Staub, I guess, is how she wants us to pronounce it. And it goes like this. It says, on National Public Radio's Talk of the Nation Science Friday program on November 19th, Gonzaga University law professor David DeWolf participated in a discussion on teaching intelligent design as an alternative to evolution. Professor DeWolf's views on intelligent design do not represent those of the university as a whole. In particular, the faculty of the biology department at Gonzaga is unanimous in its acceptance of evolutionary theory as a fundamental underlying tenet of the science of biology, according to Professor and Biology Chair Nancy Staub. The principles of evolution are as well established as any other body of scientific knowledge, and a full and correct appreciation for those principles is necessary for understanding the nature of life. Intelligent design is not a scientific alternative to evolution. The flaws in the idea of intelligent design have been amply and publicly exposed, and the biology department feels that the teaching of intelligent design has no place in a science curriculum at any level. And that comes from the biology department of Gonzaga University. And this was brought up because David DeWolf, who was not from the biology department, he's from part of the legal department, one of the law professors at the university, if I remember correctly. And they felt that a law professor making statements about biology or whether intelligent design, creationism, what have you, is correct or not, may shed false light on the views of the biology department. This is a letter that they wanted us to read to you in response to that. So we've done it, and I think that does clear up some business on our part. Let's go to the phones. Lawrence in Boise. Hi, Lawrence.
Well, good afternoon.
Hi there.
How you doing?
How do you think I'm doing? Tell me how I'm doing.
I think
you're doing. How am I doing?
You're fantastic. And I don't hand that out very easily. Your program is my favorite of any program I have ever listened to, and I'm 60 years of age.
Hey, well, you're not my mother, so you can. They don't take compliments very well. Some people, I don't. I'm one of those, but I want to thank you very much.
You have a phenomenally positive energy. You are extremely curious, and curiosity is the lens of science, in my opinion. If we go to Latin, science or scire means to know, and you only know by going to the unknown zone, which is what you take us to, because the new is only found in the unknown.
Well, Lawrence, that's a great ending of the show because we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for making my weekend for me.
Oh, one other item.
You got 10 seconds.
Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, no.
You don't love me so much anymore. Write us a letter. We'll read it next time.
I will.
Have a good holiday. That's all the time we have for today, so we're going to have to wrap it up. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Finn. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com for back editions of Science Friday and the Kids Connection there. Press on the teachers button. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.